What do you want? Statement of purpose? Should I email you? Should I put this on your action item list?
Look.
You decide your own level of involvement.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour, the newest show of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. This live episode features the situational awareness you need to practice self-reliance and independence. Introducing your hosts, Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, and Future Dan, the editor of FutureDanger.com.
Patriot Power Hour. Back in your life, October 27th, 2020, Ben the Breaker of Banksters, Cochran, on a special episode, a little bit longer, a true power hour, slightly more. Looks like we're going to be on about 70 minutes today, here with my co-host, Future Dan, FutureDanger.com. How you doing there, buddy?
Yeah, good. We got 10 extra minutes tonight because we looked at what we wanted to talk about and decided to do it right. Let's go a little bit longer.
Definitely. We only have 1 week, of course, until election 2020. We're going to be going through something which I think is going to be a pretty darn unique look at what we may be seeing in the next couple months. Not just the election 2020, but the Electoral College and contingencies in terms of voting and election. So that, what we call vulnerability assessment, we're going to be doing in the, I believe, the third segment. Up tonight, right, Future Dan?
Yeah, we're gonna keep it to the end of the show, but this is special episode. So if you're searching this up later, just jump right to about the 30-minute mark, and we will pick up on the title of the show, the election vulnerability assessment. At that point,
yep.
We're gonna do the front of the show and still do to this week's news in the second segment.
Oh yeah, for sure. As always. Going through the news blitz, FutureDanger.com news blitz here in the second segment. But before we get into all that, before we get into the election assessment, vulnerability assessment, and just general talk, because that is 1 week from today,
yep.
Pretty crazy. It seems like it's been creeping and creeping and creeping and accelerated super quickly. I don't know, just a time warp we're living in here in 2020. But before we get into all those different things, I want to give a shout out to Bitcoin. Up at near all-time highs, definitely all-time highs, except for about the time we started this show 3 years ago, Bitcoin, about
what
the time
about Bitcoin
was it's about
the, close.
Well, what I'm saying is in terms of time. So for only a few days, Bitcoin was between $15,000-$20,000 in 2017 when we started our show.
Well,
but that crashed
20 for maybe a day.
Exactly. That crashed so quickly thereafter. But
yeah,
we're back to that level now, and it's sustaining, and it's driving. And in March of this year, on this show, I'm going to toot my horn, 5,200 was Bitcoin. I was saying bye. It's $13,780 today, so nearly triple your money in 6 months. Not saying put your mortgage on Bitcoin right now. And I'm not saying if you've made all these gains but haven't sold, it might not be a bad idea to sell some. I think it would be get some of those profits off the table potentially. Get your own financial advice. We're not in the business of that.
You just want a little Kramer there.
I just want some credit on this. That's what I feel with my Kramer
sell,
right here.
Sell.
So Bitcoin, some people think it's a fraud. Some people, especially here on the Prepper Broadcasting Network, of course, Think land and firearms, food, water, preps, skills, medical, all that stuff's way more important than digital currency, which I could certainly agree. I understand. But if you're going to have some money in the bank, if you operate on the grid enough to have some money in a bank account that or 401k, then it's the same as Bitcoin, in my opinion. But there's a lot of people out there listening that may not even like keep money in the bank. I personally don't keep much money in the bank at all anyway because I don't trust them and like them. The point is, you could totally have at least leveraged these digital currencies, gotten out, and buy, sell one farm and buy three here several months later. Just something interesting. Of course, gold and silver have been on quite a ramp as well. So all this stuff's going on. But why is Bitcoin going up? Why is gold and silver going up? It's obviously this stimulus, talks of stimulus. But also people are coming to the realization another COVID shutdown's coming. The numbers are up. And whether it's warranted or not, many, many states shutting down again. And that's going to hurt the economy. And that's going to cause more money creation.
Throughout March, Bitcoin did nothing.
No.
The way through when COVID hit in March and all the shutdowns and the collapse of Wall Street in March, the black days were 2,000 point equity, Dow Jones dropping 2,000 points. It didn't do anything. It didn't inflate like it is this week.
No, well, what happened is it had a huge deflation very quickly. And I'm not saying this won't happen again, but what happened along with stocks, the difference was Bitcoin now compared to a couple years ago, Wall Street and the big banks are highly involved with it. So when there was that market panic in March, and we're looking at the chart right here, actually.
They dumped out.
They dumped out of Bitcoin as well, the institutionals.
Okay.
But what happened is, if you look at this, it just marched up nice, slowly and surely, like a healthy bull market over the last several months, from 5,000 up to 10,000 in August, 12,000, and now another leg of this bull market at nearly 14,000. So
I like it because it's finite and private.
Well, that's the big part. Is it truly private? Some people would say no. Anything on the internet is not. But
pretty much any other way to have wealth now.
Exactly. Digital wealth.
Illiquid and go into bullion. Start carrying around hunks of metal.
Yep.
Yeah, it has value. No arguing that. But harder to transact.
This is early in the life cycle of these digital currencies, too. At some point, they're not going to be going up tenfold. And we might have already passed those type of easy gains with digital currency. So, again.
But the run-up right now.
You're seeing some good stuff.
Spike like the last one.
Well, here's a great question.
It's headed in that direction.
The national debt, and we'll probably talk on this a little bit in the news blitz. We often do. The national debt has gone up $4 trillion just this year. That comes from borrowed money and printed money by the Federal Reserve. So kind of a combination, okay? Where does that money come from? It comes from nowhere. So if there's a finite amount of Bitcoin out there and there's more U.S. dollars out there, then math just says each Bitcoin is going to be worth more dollars. There's more dollars out there, same number of Bitcoin. Bitcoin's going to be worth more.
But only if people believe in it.
Well, that's true. And definitely. Again, I am big about diversification, so get your preps together, big time proponent of that, and get some of that bullion and pay off all your debt. Don't have $40,000 of credit card debt and buy some Bitcoin, like a bunch of Bitcoin with it. It's not smart. So there's limits to this, but I just want people to kind of be like, wow, Bitcoin's back from the dead. It often gets negative press when it hits the shitter, but it's back big time. But gold and silver are as well. But really, a lot of things are. The question is, what's going to deflate? At some point, all this real estate, all these antique cars and baseball cards, all this stuff's going to stop going up 10% every year for the last decade or two at some point, right? And what happens when that happens? That's my question.
As long as there's enough demand, right? We're getting down to some of the basics of economics.
I think a lot of it is that demand is really concentrated in the very like 1% or even 1% of 1%. So all those Ferraris go up massive amount, collectibles, for example, and palatial mansions, right, going up big time. But that's a very, very small percentage of the population that benefits from that type of inflation, right?
There's a lot of people that are working hard to make ends meet right now.
So, oh, yeah. Maybe, tons of people also working hard and still relying on the government and still barely making it by.
Yeah, they could care less what Bitcoin is because they're not going to ever buy it even if they had enough cash for it. They got too many important things in front.
That's true.
That holds back the price of Bitcoin.
Well, unfortunately,
it's not popular. It's not widespread.
It's starting to, but I know what you mean. Definitely for the younger folks. And this is where some people, even one of my friends was saying, you know, the same people that are boosting up the stock market through Robinhood, that investment app.
Yeah.
You know, they get in there and they don't know, they're spending their unemployment check on like stocks, like gambling on them. Yeah. They're like, they're doing the same thing with Bitcoin. And there is some of that going on, but really, we're going to stop talking about Bitcoin here. I know some people get sick of it. You got to look into what encryption is and what decentralized encryption is. Okay. Look into that and look into smart contracts and blockchains, okay? Just look into that stuff. Even if it's Bitcoin is a type of blockchain and a type of technology, right? But it's like saying, oh, I don't have a good example to say right now, I guess. But it's a specific type of blockchain rather than the blockchain itself. It's like Lycos search engine compared to the internet. Go research the internet, not Lycos. Lycos may go out. Yeah, exactly. Bitcoin may go out. Netscape Navigator may not be around much longer. Bitcoin may not either. But the internet and web browsers have only gotten bigger since 1995, right? Yeah. So Bitcoin's important, I think. But just the overall, unless you think an EMP is going to hit in the next 5 or 10 years, which you should be prepared for, and we got Dave Jones' expertise, thankfully. Love you, NBC guy. But unless you believe that's going to happen, you got to learn about this technology.
Yeah, but is Bitcoin sound? Is it security-wise, is it unbreakable? If it is, why would there need to be another one? It defines itself. It's like tissue paper. It's also called a Kleenex because Kleenex came to denominate tissue paper. That's going to be Bitcoin to crypto if it's unbreakable.
Here's the example.
But okay. There's money being poured in, yeah. And there's intelligence operations underway that, and counterintelligence operations that would love to crack it and disrupt it, right? Because right now it's a private means to do a lot of clandestine activity, and they know that. It's an affront to fiat currency system as well,
right?
It is a place to put wealth that the government is very, very stymied in controlling. Compared to, for example, typical savings and checking accounts that you have today, those the banks could do almost any rule suddenly, limiting your ability to withdraw or deposit or anything, right? At a whim. What could you do if they had the essentially quote unquote permission from the Fed to do that during a crisis? Bitcoin's outside of that.
It is outside that if you have the right security settings. It's essentially if someone's able to hack your account because you don't have two-factor authentication or bad password. Just like someone can hack your email, then your account will be hacked. But the actual blockchain itself, the only way it could be hacked is it's called a 51% attack. The amount of computing power to do that grows each day. As the price goes up, as the difficulty into the algorithm goes up, it goes up each day because they built into that knowing technology would advance. So they made it more difficult, difficult, and difficult, and difficult. So as more and more money is put into it, more and more miners go into the system that figure out this cryptology, then it's more difficult to hack. It becomes more difficult to hack each day. You need even more power to overcome. Essentially, you'd have to buy a huge amount of servers yourself and have your own mining attack, have your own miners.
It's theoretically possible, but there's no government devoting the resources to do it yet.
And they say doing that would drive it up to like $50,000, $100,000 because
as they attempt to
take it down. So they make it a blow off top and then they corrupt it. You never know. So anyway, we're going to stop talking about Bitcoin for now. I'm nerding out over here. I'm huge on, like I said, on just preps, skills, and knowledge, and gold and silver. But look into cryptocurrencies. It's very interesting. So leave it at that. Leave it at that.
Later in this show, too.
Yeah.
For your next 11 weeks watching what happens with this country, some preparatory knowledge.
Preparatory knowledge. Preparatory. Well, what else we got going on? I mean, we're going to be hitting the news blitz. I do want people make sure you go to PrepperBroadcasting.com. PrepperBroadcasting.com, you can find the entire show lineup for the entire week. Find archives directly on your web browser. I subscribe to Prepper Broadcasting Network on iTunes. Podcast Addict is the app I use. So I get that directly downloaded to my phone. But if you don't do that or don't want to, find all the different episodes on the website itself. PrepperBroadcasting.com. Some merchandise and other cool stuff there too. So check it out. And we're going to be going to break. And back with the News Blitz on Patriot Power Hour. Stick with us.
Prepper Broadcasting Network.
The six principles for disaster preparedness. Use them to build a base of preparedness that will keep your family safe in the face of the next disaster. Find them and more at PrepperBroadcasting.com.
Man, I see in Fight Club the strongest and smartest men who've ever lived. I see all this potential, and I see it squandered. God damn it, an entire generation pumping gas, waiting tables, slaves with white collars. Advertising has us chasing cars and clothes, working jobs we hate so we can buy shit we don't need. We're the middle children of history, man. No purpose or place. We have no great war, no great depression. Our great war is a spiritual war. Our great depression is our lives. We've all been raised on television to believe that one day we'd all be millionaires and movie gods and rock stars, but we won't. We're slowly learning that fact. And we're very, very pissed off.
Achieve situational awareness of multiple threat indicators in one view. Be prepared. FutureDanger.com.
We are back. Patriot Power Hour, episode 116. Calm one, the heat map dashboard. We have powerful pedophiles still being exposed. Epstein and Bill Clinton flew together, Maxwell confirms in newly unsealed deposition. Election fraud news continues to come in. Pennsylvania Supreme Court rules counties can't reject mail-in ballots when signatures don't match. Texas voting machines cannot read mail-in ballots today. 22,000 affected so far. News censorship. Reporter tells president that Biden's laptop can't be verified, quote, because it can't be verified, and refuses to talk to him about it. NPR refuses to report on presidential candidate scandals. School threatens 12-year-old with arrest for allegedly missing 90 minutes of Zoom class. And the Border Patrol admits to wireless cell phone surveillance. Unreasonable search and seizure is normalized. Security news. FBI gets man who researched killing presidential candidate arrested with van full of weapons and child pornography. High-level elected leaders listed as key contacts for Biden-China joint venture. Feinstein, Cuomo, Harris, Schumer. Meanwhile, U.S. Air Force practices for nuclear war. Exercise codenamed Global Thunder. In the United States, simultaneously military and police in Washington State prepare for possible civil unrest after the election. Last night, 30 police officers injured during rioting in Philadelphia. And the Texas governor has ordered 1,000 troops to cities for the election. Economics and finance were quiet, Ben. Military gear sales surging, though. Bond defaults deliver 99% losses in new era of American bankruptcies. Want to get into that one when we conclude the news blitz. Yesterday, the Dow fell 900 points during the day. Didn't finish that low. Little wobbly. And in the natural, scientific, and otherwise technological column, we got hormone-mimicking chemicals found to harm fish and their unexposed offspring. Fluoridated chemicals affecting Americans more than previously estimated. Another article. And Gulf of Mexico wind map going to windy.com. We got, I don't even know what the name of this storm is by now. So it's just another one this year. Been a lot of them. Remarkably scarce on the weather weapon news. More on the fringe conspiracy side. We never really see much for that one, but this year it's remarkable how little that's being discussed, where, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, several record mega storms in the Gulf would have at least spun up people of that mindset. Future danger, we haven't seen the hard evidence for it. There's your heat map. 1 week before 2020 election, Ben. Want to jump into this little bit of news about bond defaults?
Sure.
Yeah, 99% of the losses are now being practiced in the marketplace where lenders are not going to get anything back. Usually, you know, in the day when a company defaulted, it bankrupted itself, you know, 40% would go back. You know, if you were a lender, if you owned the corporate bond, bondholders could get, you know, 40 cents on the dollar. Now it's going to be like 2 cents, 1 cent, a fraction of a penny, if that.
Right. Get a check for $9.87 off your $1 million.
What's that tell you about how bad that collapse was in March come now?
That kind of shows how it takes some time to work through the financial system. That was a crazy shock that's still being felt and haven't fully recovered from. All we've done is paper over it with the stimulus and with massive debt spending and 0% interest rates, but there are real bankruptcies and there's real money being lost by those bondholders. Those bondholders could be pension funds. Those bondholders could be
derivative traders.
Well, they take those and then spin them up into like crazy abominations. So
yeah, like houses of cards that tend to collapse.
So if you want to, so for your average person here listening, yeah, your pension fund, your retirement, your company's cash flows, all these things could be tied to that. But if we're talking about a kind of systemic risk to the system, then absolutely.
It's kind of how I always, that's what future big picture is oriented towards.
Yeah.
That firms widely failing, credit markets collapsing are parts of a total picture.
Mm-hmm.
And you personalize it to people who, this is how it affects you directly. Both are important, but we tend to focus on the big picture.
Yep.
This is the only bad red light piece of news in the economic column this week. But well, it is terrible. Like, think about it. If a company went bankrupt in the 80s or the 90s, creditors could typically expect to get 40% back on their investment. It's the company itself wasn't, you know, done for. It wasn't like empty.
Well, the thing, yeah, that's a
now,
great way to put it.
Now they are what? They are stripped clean of anything.
They are literally stripped clean. It literally is vulture capitalism where they have no assets, and any assets they have are outweighed heavily by debt.
Zombie companies.
Yeah. So I think this is just a great bullet point to show that all this, we've been getting away kicking the can down the road, but what's been going on is that flesh, that 40%, has been rotting away. Now there's nothing left. There's no meat on the bones. So when these are going bankrupt, it's going all the way to zero. And anyone who was a teacher, I'd say this because my mom was a teacher for a while, If you get a zero on a test, that's much worse than a 40. You know, it really hurts your accounting. Let's just say that. You're not going to be able to recover from a zero on one of your investments as easily as one of your investments, you know, have 40 cents on the dollar. You can work with that or try to work with that. Zero is just unacceptable.
Anybody who paid the price in any school where you missed an assignment knows, yeah.
Exactly. Like, yep.
I couldn't get an A anymore right after I did that. The best I could do is a B minus for the rest of the semester.
Seriously.
That kind of happened, didn't it?
I learned this in college because if you miss a quiz, it's way worse than, if you know, at least go and put your name on it and put random bubbles into the pick a bubble test sheet, right? You'll get like a way better score than not going to the test if you didn't study. Of course, I always studied, though, right? Of course I did. But what I don't know. It's kind of going down a rabbit hole here, but I know exactly what you mean. The question is, was this just the tip of the iceberg? Are there a lot more, number one, of these bankruptcies that are occurring and are filling up the system? Well, or will they also have 80, 90, 99 cents on the dollar lost?
The investor fear gauge, the VIX, volatility index, that's punching up a little bit above 30 this week. And gold, it's at 1908 tonight, live on Patriot Power Hour. That's live gauge. So we got a few indicators that are headed towards the red zone, the measurables in the economic column. 900-point swing yesterday downward in the stock market isn't, you know, just green level. Hey, pay attention. The stock market's doing something it hasn't done in several weeks. What about a Black October simultaneous with an election? Is it possible? You see it between here and next week?
Here's the thing. With COVID, it's just such an X factor, and everyone can say that in 2020, I'm sure. I don't know if we're going to see like a Black October, let's just say equivalent to this last March. I don't know if we're going to see that in the next 1 week where we get 5, 6, 7% loss in a day and we see multiple of the, the fail-safes trigger. Remember, they had, I think, two in the same day they hit their fail-safe because it
happened in March.
So will we see that between now and 1 week from now, which is the election? I don't think it's extremely likely. But after the election and before inauguration, we might.
Anything is possible. Everybody knows that. Probabilities, though, of some trading halts. You know, it doesn't take a lot in a market this size. The old rules apply. And in March 17th and 18th, we hit breakers. But that, you know, that was...
And before, too.
Yeah. Well, from the 9th. The 8th and the 9th of March, all the way through the 18th. 8th of March to 18th of March. We're not saying that's going to happen this next week, folks, but how many billionaires out there could kind of revolt and help that happen because they figured out how to play the bounce anyways? They just assume there'll be a bounce anyways and are ready to do that to sow panic, if possible, in the next 7 days.
Like I said, anything's in the cards. I'm not betting on it per se, but it's definitely higher than a 0% chance. Like, I think, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit with the vulnerability assessment, electoral vulnerability assessment. I think it's maybe more likely that between next week, the election night, and what, December 14th, the actual vote of the Electoral College, between there, we might see a Black October or Black November type of day.
That would be a slide that's out of anybody's control. I'm talking about the next 7 days, an orchestrated downturn in the market to just remind baby boomers who maybe haven't voted yet that, you know, how terrible the Trump years were and he cannot be trusted to continue in power.
Well, if that happens, you got a good soundbite right now. I don't know. I don't make those predictions. I just buy Bitcoin.
We're looking at scenarios.
No, I know what you mean. It's definitely, it could be possible. I think that they got too much to lose and the system is so precarious that they can't really play those games. You know, Jerome Powell over there at the Fed just cranking out unlimited money, barely keeping the ship afloat. Things bursting at the seams. So I don't know if they can like play games like that, but if they purposefully tank the system between now and then, not even worrying about coming back, I mean, that could be like their They're like, oh, we're going to lose this election. Might as well just blow it apart. Not saying it's going to happen, but I think that's just as likely.
We'll get into several dimensions step by step in the second half of the show on if the election is not proceeding smoothly, if historical snafus do arise, there's violence that we've never seen before with our election and all the processes through the Electoral College. You know, that's the security dimension, but the economic and financial dimension and the media censorship dimension, we're going to get into all of those.
Tons of stuff, really. And we got, you did your research here, sir. I mean, folks, what we're going to go into here in the second half of Patriot Power Hour, we got about 40 minutes left. We can go to break, but right on the way back out is probably, you know, like graduate level. You know, if you're getting a political science graduate degree, this is the stuff you would look into. And I have a minor in political science, so I touched on some of these things. I'm not. You're better. You're more of an expert by far on these things and the machinations of government. But what we're going to run through is kind of an education in of itself, but also forecasting what could be on the horizon and what to look out for in the next couple months, right?
Well, if you're a patriot, you care about how our Constitution is supposed to work for transition to power. And if you're a prepper, watching step by step where the threats could emerge and what triggers you have built into your plan, if it's whether it's bug out or other measures, purchases, whatever it may be, we're going to look at those trigger points and how it affects you.
Definitely. All right, guys, going to break right now. Stick with us. On the other side, Patriot Power Hour will continue, and we'll get into this vulnerability assessment. Be right back.
Are you prepared to be the family doctor in a disaster or emergency? This is the Intrepid Commander, and I'm holding the Prepper's Medical Handbook by William W. Forgy, M.D. In this great book, you'll learn how to prepare for medical care off the grid. You'll learn about assessment and stabilization. You'll even deal with things like bioterrorism response, radiation, and how to build the off-grid medical kit at home. Look, 2020 taught us a lot about the limitations of our medical infrastructure in America. Get the Prepper's Medical Handbook today at Amazon.com. Again, that's the Prepper's Medical Handbook by William W. Forgy.
We'd make one hell of a team, Snake.
The name's Plissken.
I'm no more Snake Plissken.
When I get back, I'm gonna kill you.
You gonna kill me now, Snake?
I'm too tired. Maybe later.
And remember, once you're inside, you're on your own.
Oh, you mean I can't count on you?
No.
Good.
You're Snake Plissken, ain't you?
What do you want?
I thought you were dead.
Heard you were dead.
I heard you were dead.
Listen, Snake, I swear to God, I thought you were dead.
Yeah, you and everybody else.
I know who you are, but I heard you were dead.
I am.
It was an accident. About an hour ago, a small jet went down inside New York City. The president was on board.
President of what?
That's not funny, Plissken.
Patriot Power Hour. We're coming back live. October 27th, 2020, second half of the show. Look, guys, it's the last show of October and 1 week until election. It's here. It's no more joke. But we're going to get into why next week isn't really the finish line and actually might just be the start of everything. How November 3rd, Election Day, it's just one in a series of a potential timeline. Future Dan, I want you to kind of get started
there. Bring it up, man. Let's look at the vulnerability assessment that we put together for the show. A vulnerability assessment, Ben, is the process of identifying and ranking weaknesses in a system. Okay? That's what we're using that term for tonight. And examples of systems that traditionally receive a vulnerability assessment include information technology systems, Bitcoin, right? What are the vulnerabilities? We already talked about that sort of thing. Energy supply systems, water supply systems, transportation systems, communication systems. As preppers, you know, you look at vulnerabilities in your preps in many and others, food supply, all of it, right? Tonight on Patriot Power Hour, episode 116, October 27th, 2020, we are going to discuss how our nation's electoral system has vulnerabilities this year through early 2021, all the way to Inauguration Day on January 20th. So 11 weeks, starting next Tuesday, which is election night. All right? So broke this down into a bunch of phases. We are going to go over the Electoral College in detail, but something that you've not heard before is we're going to look at potential threats at each step of the way. Now, the ramifications of that, we're going to spend a little time on each of these phases. And we, like we said last segment, we're talking about the media, the spin that will be applied, the security situation of authorities, how they control and hopefully prevent some of these threats from happening. We're going to, and possibly we're going to look at the financial, economic, what could be simultaneously happening that puts pressure on the system. And I'm going to also look at from a foreign adversary's point of view. If you're a regime that has ill intentions for the United States, or at least wants to influence the outcome, what those state actors could do. So non-state actors, a lot of them inside the United States, but also, you know, foreign state actors. All right? So phase one is all the voting up to and including next Tuesday, Election Day. So it's going on right now. We're in phase one. Each state counts its popular votes according to the state its state's laws. In 14 states, election officials cannot start counting votes until Election Day. That means tonight, Ben, 36 states vote counting has already begun. All right? So we call this E0 in our vulnerability assessment. This is Election Day 0, the day it's happening, right? The now next dimension or next factor we're going to look at is vulnerable resources. I just gave you the phase, the basis, the constitutional, federal law, and state law basis for that part of our election, the timeline. Now we're going to get into resources that are vulnerable at that phase. So in this first phase, we're talking 400,000 to 500,000 poll workers in the United States across 50 states and the District of Columbia. All right, that's where the vulnerabilities exist. And bad actors among those numbers or near those numbers can influence outcome, you know, influence the outcome. This whole phase is where the president for weeks has been talking about the Great Steal and all of the things that can be done to ballots we'll get into in a moment. But the primary threat on Election Day has to be looked at in terms of attacks on polling places. Armed groups at polling places, violence at polling places. Will it happen? We don't know, but this has been a very violent summer. The events in Wisconsin and other places across the United States have shown that there's no reason to discount the possibility of attacks and violence near or at polling places. Okay? The secondary threat that more people are focused on right now includes all the forms of electoral fraud. Postal ballot fraud, voter impersonation, misleading or confusing ballots, like in Florida in 2000. Unofficial ballot boxes have been reported this year. Ballot box stuffing, just fake votes. Ballot destruction, always a concern. Many, many articles on completed ballots, postal ballots being destroyed. We've got those reports already. Ballot invalidation at the polls. Voting machine tampering, hacking of the voting machines, electronic tallying errors, and just misrecording of votes. Every version and permutation of that kind of activity is a potential threat. I'm saying the obvious, right? But rioting in the vicinity of counting and possibly recounting operations is also possible. in swing states where we've already had riots. I'm naming it out there right now. It's Wisconsin. It's coming to my mind. If rioting is in the vicinity of places where votes are contested, what happens? If a zone loses control by the authorities, they're going to have to move the ballots. During transition and movements of ballots, that's when other things like ballot destruction or stuffing is a lot easier. This is the primary threat during phase one. Now, I'm going to turn it over to you. The media or financial dimension to that, what do you see happening between this episode, episode 116, and next week, episode 117, election night?
Well, earlier in the show, you were actually asking me a little bit, do I foresee a Black October between now and election day? And that could always happen. We've seen some tremors, but I think it's more likely we'll see, if we see something like that, it'll take place after E minus zero or, you know, E day. I could see it happening more in mid to late November, even into December financially. So
a crash on election days in the cards.
No, but if we see massive attacks like bombings and shootings coordinated, of course we will. But if there's,
I guess we should research. Wall Street's open that day, right?
I would expect so.
That's a trading day.
I don't believe it's a federal holiday in any way. I don't think so.
So the market's going on that day.
So if that happened, of course. But what I'm saying is, otherwise, if it's kind of more of a slow burn and we're moving on to phase two, three, four, not because of a terror attack, let's say, nuclear war, notwithstanding, then that might be more of later in the future phases is more of a market turmoil, I think, as things haven't really shook out yet and people start getting a little antsy, a little more panicky going into December and into the holidays too.
What about the media environment on election day? What do you
That might be near peak circus. It may peter out a little bit after that and then kind of rise back up, especially if we head towards Electoral College if we make it to that phase. But I think really the media will be in full effect, full circus mode, and already is.
One bit throughout this entire timeline.
You don't think it's going to relent one bit?
It's a relentless machine. It's nonstop.
All right. Maybe no respite. Maybe it only accelerates then.
But declaring winners could be dangerous. Declaring Biden a winner.
That's what I'm wondering.
And then taking it away when the vote didn't materialize and it's challenged.
Could
be cause that rioting. And if recounting operations are going on, it won't be as genteel as it was in Florida in 2000.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
One could expect.
That's a great way to put it. It's not going to be the same way. No. And this is where I think you brought this up. What was the genesis of this conversation? Maybe 6 weeks ago I asked you how could the election be delayed, and you essentially said it can't be constitutionally unless they amend the Constitution. And we're going to kind of walk through all that right now.
Yeah.
But the media declaring a winner as a propaganda effort won't affect the election
and
results, but it has huge implications. But there's kind of like that dividing line for this conversation. We're trying to kind of have that bulkhead between those, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think there is a firm bulkhead. All this goes to court, right? And Trump just got his third pick into the Supreme Court this week. So, yesterday, right?
Yeah.
So, you can see why he was aiming for that. Let's get into some of the next phases, because this is where results do have a possibility. There's a lot of gaps, as I see it, in the entire structure. The Electoral College has served us pretty well over the history of our country. But twice in this century, it's produced presidents that did not win the popular vote. And a lot of disgruntlement by the losers. And maybe, just maybe, people thought about all of what I'm about to talk about ahead of time. They've, quote-unquote, war-gamed it and done their own vulnerability assessment. And there are weak areas. We're going to get into those. So the next step after each state counts its popular votes is that state certification of popular vote has to happen. I'll say that again. State certification of the popular vote. That has to happen. All right. State election officials certify the popular vote of each state. In 38 states, Ben, this is the this official is the state's Secretary of State or Secretary of the Commonwealth. Virginia, Massachusetts, you know, Commonwealth state, same difference here. That's 38 states have one person that does it. In 12 states, elections are certified by dedicated agencies, usually called the Board of Elections, okay? Delaware gives officials the least amount of time to certify, 2 days. California state law gives their officials the most time to certify, 37 days. But there are a few states, Hawaii, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Tennessee, they have no law that specifies a date to certify their elections. They just have to get it done before the Electoral College. So we're talking about this state certification of popular vote lasting from November 5th, the day after the day that Delaware has to do it by. These are no later than dates. They can do it earlier. To December 11th, all the way out there for California, right? And who are the vulnerable resources in this time frame? We're talking about less than 100 officials in the United States, including 38 secretaries of state and the members of the other 12 states' election boards. So estimating about 100 officials. It's in their hands, all right? A particular state, here's the threat. A particular state that cannot hold a valid statewide election could be discounted entirely by you know, court challenges would take it to the Supreme Court, but it could be invalidated, right? So pick a state, Michigan. They can't certify their popular vote in any credible way, right? Because of the things we talked about earlier, the ballot destruction and rioting near polling, loss of rule of law. They can't certify, okay? If it goes later on in this process towards the Electoral College, there may be no decision and that state doesn't count, right? We held a civil war in this country and the Electoral College functioned in the middle of it because the states that were in rebellion were not in the Electoral College, but it still worked for the states that were, okay? That thing's designed
right,
that perhaps not all states are participating, okay? All right? It's hard to recognize that in contemporary thinking, but that's the machine, and that's how it could work, right? So targeting certifying officials, and this is where we're going to get real.
Okay.
We're going to get real. We're going to talk about things that hopefully James Walton doesn't get a call from anybody about for the content. But as a disclaimer, I don't want to see this happen. Ben Cochran doesn't want to see this happen. This is not
correct.
Not advocating this.
Correct. Not we're advocating.
About this is a threat to our very constitutional system to, manage the power transitions in this country. But targeting these certifying officials with assassination, kidnapping, extortion, bribery could be a means to invalidate a state election, cast it into chaos, and therefore cause it later when the Electoral College meets to not count.
And that's something that I didn't really know much about this, at least at this level of detail. And what I mean is I asked you, what if a few states need an extension, right? The dog ate my homework, or there were extortion, kidnapping, bribery, riots, massive ballot destruction, or other issues at hand, even an earthquake or something crazy. States
can change their law during this.
Well, but by we're going to get into
state law level right now.
Okay, so this is state law level. Well, I guess I'm jumping the gun a little bit then. But what you said, but what you're talking about though, what I wanted to get to was, in the end, if they're not able to do it, a particular state that cannot hold a valid statewide election may be discounted entirely by the Supreme Court.
Right.
And that's where I see more of the weak spot is, a state or multiple states, especially swing states, unable to complete their election on time, or there's massive discrepancies, issues, whatever. Then if they're thrown out, that could throw everything into disarray. I know that's kind of blending a next level, but continue.
People that heard me correctly are thinking he's talking about assassinations or kidnappings of secretaries of state. Like state, they're usually like the third highest ranking official, underneath the governor and the, lieutenant governor. Frequently, the Secretary of State is the next highest official in the state, right? They're in this succession for the state. to have one of them die or mysteriously die, or mysteriously die of COVID-19 or something else. Now, we're talking about an opportunity for foreign powers with clandestine services to conduct. You want to talk about election interference? That would be hard election interference, all right? Or just extortion, bribery. Maybe there's a Secretary of the State that wants to just do it their business, but they're compromised and find a way. Someone finds a way to stymie. That's phase two: state certification and popular vote. Now, the show must go on, literally and figuratively. So, Patriot Power Hour is going to continue to phase three, and this is how the electoral system would continue. All right. The next step is confirmation of elector slates. What am I talking about? On election day, the voters select a ticket, right? Trump, Pence, Biden, Harris, a ticket for a party. And thereby, they select the associated electors. The Electoral College consists of 538 electors. The 23rd Amendment grants the District of Columbia the same number of electors as the least populous state. This has always been three, right? One congressman and two senators. U.S. territories are not entitled to any electors. That's why Puerto Rico doesn't vote for president. At least 270 electoral votes are required to win, an absolute majority of the 538. Each presidential, vice presidential ticket has an associated slate of potential electors chosen by state political parties. Except in Maine and Nebraska, the winner of the plurality first past the post, not a majority, just the most counted in your state, the winner receives all of that state's electors, a.k.a. winner takes all. State law controls how vacancies in its College of Electors are handled. So we didn't get a chance, and we're not going to have time, to talk about how all 50 states would replace one of these electors. But federal law says that any controversy concerning the appointment of electors must be decided, according to state law, at least 6 days before the meeting of the electors. So this year, that's December 8th. And this is the period where electors could be targeted for assassination, kidnapping, and extortion, bribery, same things. They are vulnerable. We're down to 538 electors, and things can happen. I'm going to move along, Ben, because a lot of these things are related. The meeting of the Electoral College happens 6 days later. This year, the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December is December 14th. That's what law specifies. All right? Federal law says that that's the day electors vote. And it shall be the day, must be the same throughout the United States. If it doesn't happen on the 14th, it doesn't count. You can't vote on the 13th, can't vote on the 17th. Because you were afraid of COVID-19 for three extra days. It has to happen on December 14th. Or states, electors, they did not participate in the Electoral College. At the meeting, the state's election certifying official, the person we talked about in the previous phase, reads what's called a certificate of ascertainment. This document sets forth who was chosen to cast the electoral vote. So, for example, if Biden and Harris win New York State, that set of electors has already been named people. Those people's vote choose the president, just as long as you're clear on that, all right? If a state fails to make a choice on December 14th, the electors may be appointed on... there is an allowance that if a state can't make the choice on the on that day... Electors may be appointed on a subsequent day as the state legislature directs. So it's a little bit fuzzy if, you know, how it's counted after the 14th if all the electors aren't there. But elector targeted for kidnapping, assassination, that sort of thing could throw a real wrench into the system. It's unclear how much time states may have to allow political parties to appoint another elector. The replacement of electors who have been killed, mysteriously die, go missing, may create cases that go straight to the Supreme Court. And now think about rioting breaking out nationwide during this period. All right. And electoral disputes getting solved. You know, legal disputes on electors now, not the vote count, but electors happening going to the Supreme Court. All right. That's phase four. And during phase four, one other thing that could happen, faithless electors. A faithless elector is a member of the Electoral College who does not vote for the president or vice presidential candidate for whom their party sent them there to vote. There's no, and this has happened. This has happened in our history. There's no constitutional provision or federal law requiring electors to vote according to the popular vote of their states. In 33 states, including D.C., there are laws against faithless electors. But again, if you take one out, if one is extorted or bribed or compromised, and you get them to vote against their slate, against their party, that could tip it in a very close electoral college. You know, we're talking both candidates are 260s and all, trying to get above 270. And there are scenarios where the states can just work out that way and it gets us there, all right? And, you know, the rioting that could potentially be happening simultaneous to this, because of that media spin, a faithless voter, imagine a faithless Biden voter, elector. That could, you know, why would that happen and what could happen next? It could be very violent times. And again, this is happening on December 14th.
I think this is where, if it's not resolved by now, you're going to be seeing a lot of panic maybe in the markets. And yeah, at this point, I'll be like, darn, I don't know if they're going to get it done. Because as I think you mentioned phase three, it's, let me read exactly on this sheet. Federal law says that December 8th is the deadline. The appointment of electors must be decided according to state law and federal law.
On the 8th, you got to pick the people, and on the 14th, they got to do their vote.
Exactly. So you got at least 6 days before the meeting, you have to pick them. So December 8th is huge, and obviously December 14th. But here's, I kind of liken this, let's go back to the old sports analogies. Something like a pass interference call or a foul in basketball has some gray area. But at least they have replay these days. This has a lot of contingency plans built in, and we're actually going to get into more of them. But there's a lot of gray area that's not been tested. And I think you mentioned some of it earlier, but these faithless electors, if they're allowed to do that, if they face punishment, the delays, any kind of COVID delays, can an amendment be made to the official Electoral College record after the fact, an amended record sent to Congress after December 14th? It looks like almost certainly not, but it's never really been tested a lot of these.
Let me get into that, because we had to certify the popular vote earlier, and we talked about the vulnerabilities at that step. Next step is certifying state Electoral College votes. And there's a lengthy process where, you know, the documents are produced and sent seven versions to all different offices, including the National Archive in D.C., who is the official record. But it goes to a local courthouse, it goes to a local judge. So it's kept at the state capitol. So they make, and this is all from the old days where you needed seven copies of things put everywhere, right? Now it still has to be done that way. It's in paper. It's not electronic in the least. But after the vote, each state sends a certified record of their electoral votes to Congress. It's unclear if the votes of substituted electors appointed for vacancies can be counted after that date in an amended record sent to Congress. So the states will be in this position. Well, we got to send 13, but we should have 14. But can't send the 14th vote because the person was missing. All right? The threat from civil unrest to the outcome of the election during this phase is actually minimal, right? It's all in the hands of the machinery of the state governments now. Only a severe physical attack by a foreign adversary. We're talking, you know, a nuclear war, an invasion, or some massive natural disaster that could upset everything all the time anyways, could stop this from happening. But nevertheless, this media spin on what's happening behind the scenes and how court decisions are being decided could produce a lot of domestic violence, rioting.
And really, the markets, especially stock markets these days, are highly predicated upon the news cycle. So they may just, even as you said, there's a firewall here and it's in the state machinery at this point. So you would think minimal threat, but it could be the highest panic being kind of issued by the media at this point.
It just in terms of everything we're talking about tonight, all these phases, this is the sixth phase. It's relatively resilient, right? Those other phases, you know, deaths of electors, deaths of certifying officials, those, you know, 500,000 poll workers and what they may do or be subjected to themselves, you know, a lot more opportunity to cheat the vote, manipulate the vote, interfere. Now we're getting into more secure because you're higher levels of government. The seventh phase is January 6th, and that is specified by federal law that there will be a joint session of Congress, Senate and the House together, and the certified votes of the electors are opened and read during a joint session. A state certificate of vote can be rejected only, and this is constitutional, only if the Senate and the House vote by plain majorities to accept the objection. Unlikely in this environment that that will happen. Now, just to be clear, this is the new Congress. They all get sworn in and then they do this.
Okay. January 6, 2021, the brand new Congress joint session would be, this is the joint session and they're going, what, this is a tiebreaker? How do you explain this?
No, they're counting the electoral votes as they come in from the states.
Okay, remember, okay.
This originated from when Maine had to send a carriage with the letters to D.C., right? Used to be a lot longer. We didn't even get the inauguration until like April or March, right? You had to let the snow melt.
The olden days.
Couldn't get there on sleighs or something. Still now, it takes weeks to do this. We're up into January 6th, so this is 64 days after the election. E plus 64.
Okay.
And individual elector votes, by the way, can also be rejected and would not be counted. But again, you'd have to have plain majorities of both houses, and it doesn't seem likely in the contemporary environment that that can happen. But who knows what the outcome is for all those elections, right? If any candidate receives an absolute majority on January 6th, they are declared the winner by Congress, meaning they got 270 electoral votes. But like we said earlier, if some state certificates of vote are nullified by judicial decree because of rampant irregularities, it just becomes impossible to get a vote that could be, you know, legally sustained to Congress. Those electoral votes don't count. Essentially, the entire state will disenfranchise itself if it can't hold an election properly. The vulnerable resource for the rest of this, you know, phase 7, 8, 9 is going to be the 535 people, 100 senators, and 435 members of the House of Representatives. And all of Congress, again, could be targeted for assassination, kidnap, extortion, bribery. All right? If they can't get to that 270, Ben, we're running out of time. We've got 8 minutes, so I got to plow through this.
All right. Have at it.
Contingent presidential election. If no candidate for either house receives 270, the choice falls to Congress in a procedure known as a contingent election. In the contingent election, the newly elected House turns itself into a presidential election session and should go into session immediately to vote. It's unclear if they have to. And the Speaker of the House could do something different, and that could be a crisis. Delegations from at least 33 states must be present for voting to take place. The House is limited to choosing from among the three candidates who receive the most votes. Each state delegation votes as a block, meaning one vote is assigned to each of the 50 states. Candidates must receive an absolute majority, meaning 26 votes. And it's not clear if some delegations don't show up, but I think they still have to reach 26. It's not an absolute majority of those who are there. It's absolutely a majority of those in the union, 50. State delegations with an even number of representatives may produce ties. Therefore, multiple ballots may occur until a winner is chosen. Federal law says governors can hold special elections to fill House vacancies at any time during extraordinary circumstances. So that comes back to what if people are lost, go missing, refuse to participate, are sick, infirm, incapacitated, bribed. That all could happen. Now we're talking about at the national legislature level. All right. If less than 33 state delegations are present, voting is prohibited. But that would be, you know, extremely severe situation for the United States, and we'd have a lot worse things to
deal
with.
Yeah.
Remember, though, that District of Columbia does not vote in a contingent election. Rioting in D.C. could resume like it was this summer. And, of course, during this type of activity, foreign adversaries may choose to act against our national security interests. Other countries may just start invading each other because they know we're too preoccupied. We already see Azerbaijan and Armenia at war. Yeah. And it's like they know other countries can't necessarily stop them. The Middle East could fly apart. Right now, we're not going to have time tonight, but we're going to put it out as it happens next week. House delegations that currently have slim Republican majorities, slim Democrat majorities, split delegations. But the only thing I wanted to tell you this is that going into it, the Republicans hold a major, a 5-7 state advantage with the current Congress, assuming it doesn't change that much. Going into a contingent election. But there are 9 states that Republicans have 2 or less. I'm sorry, 7 states where they have 2 or less leads in their delegations. But they have 5 states where there's only 1 House representative. Montana, Alaska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming. Eliminating one of those Congress people and not being able to replace them in time, single point of failure. Yeah. Vermont and Delaware are the 2 Democrat states that have a single member. And of all the states, Michigan is currently tied 7-7 in a delegation. So again, if people are missing or it's an even tie, the vote can't count and they can't proceed. It could get blocked for weeks. Contingent vice presidential election, pretty much the same deal. The vice president is elected by the Senate. Senate has to have 66 senators in session. So there are risks that come with that, but we're paying attention to that because you could produce a President Biden and Vice President Pence or President Trump and Vice President Harris scenario if some of these states are extremely close and we get to how slim a chance you may think any of this is. It's all possible. All right. The next phase, Ben, is an acting presidency or vice presidency. If the House of Representatives cannot choose a president-elect in the next 14 days to inauguration, we're going from January 6th to January 20th this year. All right? If they can't pick one, the vice president-elect will become acting president, right? If the Senate gets the work done but the House can't, the vice president-elect will become the acting president on inauguration. All right. If neither of them can be selected, the Speaker of the House becomes the acting president. Okay. So the resources that are at threat here are at the top level of our legislature. Again, 535 members of Congress and the acting presidents and vice presidents, if there are any. The national security infrastructure required to secure U.S. interests around the globe at this phase would probably require the Speaker of the House, if it came to that, to occupy the White House, just to be in, fly on Air Force One. They would be the acting president. And this would cause disarray in the executive branch. And it's definitely a time, if you're looking at it from abroad or domestic enemy of the Constitution, that you could take advantage of the situation. Finally, the only other phase I wanted to get into, Ben, got 1 minute for you to react, is if the 11th phase of our vulnerability assessment on Patriot Power is a 25th Amendment vice presidential coup. If the Electoral College somehow produced a vice president from the opposing party, that person could mount a 25th Amendment Section 4 involuntary dismissal of a president. Constitution says that the vice president with a majority of the 15 cabinet secretaries may declare the president unable to discharge the powers. All they have to do is sign one document. The transfer of authority to vice president is immediate. This was done in case like a president was unconscious or so ill, right? Or just whatever. They weren't there, right? They were caught in a nuke strike. This is what it takes to transfer power without any other mechanism, right? But if you had a Harris vice president and a President Trump, what could happen? All right, that would be a real threat to the second Civil War in the United States if the 25th Amendment vice presidential coup was attempted.
Great breakdown. A lot to digest there. I mean, if we do end up going this route, we're going to have weeks and weeks and months to watch it unfold, and we'll have this as a guide. Not saying this is going to happen. We're just trying to see what could happen. But guess what? That's the end of the show. We're running out of time. Next Generation show's coming up on PBN. We're going to be back on election night itself, starting this timeline. We're actually in the middle of it already, but continuing that march. Future Dan, another good show in the books. Have a good week. I'll see you next week. All right.
We'll be here covering the election live.
Patriot Power Hour.